So welcome everyone to the 2023 Virtual Region Convention. The topic of this workshop is a traditions forum. My name is Margie and I'm a compulsive overeater and the moderator for this workshop. Our speakers are Gary and Meg. Let's start the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference. The format for the workshop is that we will allow each speaker up to 15 minutes, and then the floor will be open for about 15 minutes for Q&A.
I start? Timing? Yep.
Yep.
Hi, everybody. I'm a recovered compulsive eater and a member of the Saturday Solutions Group. My name is Gary. It's not a surprise that this is, the tradition workshop is a relatively small gathering. And it's also, how it is. For the most part, when you do these tradition workshops or talk about traditions, the people who show up are people who are already into the traditions, so I hope I don't bore you with too much stuff you already know about or care about. And those of us who are into the traditions, of course, we're like evangelicals. What we want to do is go around and spread the gospel of the traditions and how we should all love them, because they really are just lovely spiritual practice. In fact, it's really important to remember what the traditions are. That the traditions are, it sounds like I'm minimalizing, but they're just traditions. They're not rules. And it's important to keep that in mind. They're like considered best practices. And they're really important because they keep the meeting safe. They keep us safe primarily from each other. As much as Zoom intruders seem to be a problem, the bigger problem is our egos. The bigger problem is our fellow member, myself and my fellow members. And that's really what I need to be protected against. And that's what the traditions do. But it's important to remember that love rules, that love trumps all this stuff. Some of us just really love rules. Treat the traditions like a club to bludgeon one another with. Like somebody says the wrong thing, or they quote an outside source or something like that, and somebody yells at them from across. We don't do that here. It's so unloving and it's so unkind and so unnecessary. Most violations of traditions can be discussed after the meeting, one on one with somebody. And if it's a continued problem with the meeting, you bring it up at the meeting and. But they're not intended to harm anybody. They're intended to make our lives safer, not tougher, not meaner. I do like, whenever I talk about the traditions, I like to read something first. This is from from AA Comes of Age, which is the story of the creation of the traditions. And this is what it says. The 12 traditions also point straight at many of our individual defects. By implication, they ask each of us to lay aside pride and resentment. They ask for personal as well as group sacrifice. They ask us never to use the AA name in any quest for personal power or distinction or money. The traditions guarantee the equality of all members and the independence of all groups. They show how we may best relate ourselves to each other and the world outside. They indicate how we can best function in harmony as a great whole. For the sake of the welfare of our entire society, the traditions ask that every individual, every group, and every area shall lay aside all desires, ambitions, and untoward actions that could bring serious division among us or lose for us the confidence of the world at large. In other words, they're pretty cool. They're really lovely, as opposed to, people treat them as a concept, as rules of behavior. A common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. Unity alone is a worthy topic for meditation, and just to spend some time meditating on unity. And we own this thing. That's really what it means, that we own this thing, that years of physical and emotional isolation have wounded us, and now we really are part of a group. We're part of something bigger than ourselves. A friend of mine says being part of something important makes you important, and there's truth in that being part of this great movement and of healing other compulsive eaters and people with eating disorders. What a blessing to be part of that. And it's not an accident that we're on this thing, that we're here to bear witness. And here's the neat thing about the first tradition. Something matters more to us than myself. It's just that simple. That unity means more to me than my own desires, my own plans, my own schemes. A friend of mine says addicts don't plan, they scheme. But unity is also a really, really fragile thing. I was at a meeting once. I'm from New York. And this guy came in and he was wearing a hat with the Boston logo, for the Boston Red Sox. And the Red Sox had just beaten the Yankees at something terrible. And he was wearing this thing. And then when he shared, he said something nasty about New York. And I just wanted to kick his chair. I just wanted to, like it doesn't take much. That's like, I don't wear, I never wear like political, anything that has any kind of leaning in it. To a meeting, because it really is easy to disturb this thing, especially if you look at what's been going on. And it's amazing. AA grew up in the years coming into World War II. Talk about controversial times. OA grew up during the civil rights movement. It grew up during the feminist movement. It grew up during the Vietnam War, and none of that crap mattered. None of that stuff mattered. What mattered is that we loved one another and put our group and our group conscious first. And talking about group conscious, of course, that's the second tradition for our group purposes, but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as he may express himself in our group conscious. Our leaders are but trusted servants that do not govern. Yeah, what a nice thing. We have a service structure instead of a power structure. What a unique type of arrangement that is. And we're here to do service and enjoy it. We do not govern. There's no service body that can do anything to monitor anybody. And seeking power in an OA room, in an OA meeting, is a little bit demented. It's a little bit we all know that some of our meetings have elder statesmen, some of our meetings have bleeding deacons. And you might not have noticed, this is just my experience in OA. There are a couple of controlling people in OA, myself among them. And sometimes we run into difficulty around this. And it is so wonderful to put group conscious first. Group conscious doesn't always happen. It's not the same thing as a majority vote. Although frequently we have to settle for a majority vote. Frequently that's the best we can do. But group conscious is really when the whole group seeks the consciousness of God, or seeks their higher power's consciousness. And so we're no longer like voting or determining our own ideas and our own opinions, but what we earnestly believe our higher power wants for us to do, what is best for the group. And it's a really beautiful thing when it kind of descends upon us. Cindy and I have talked about this a few times because we were both delegates at the World Service that brought back Dignity of Choice. And we both went there positive. We were against Dignity of Choice. We were against a food plan. And then there was a discussion, there was debate, and then it just kind of was clear. And it was almost, after all kinds of controversy, it was really clear that all of us were touched by spirit and asked to pass it. And we did. Thank you that we did. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. This is one of the two traditions everybody knows. Everybody knows tradition 3 and tradition 7. Here's the thing about this tradition. When I came in, early in recovery, I was talking to my sponsor, and I was complaining about all the obnoxious jerks in OA. I wasn't using the word obnoxious jerks. I was talking guy to guy. But I was complaining about all the obnoxious jerks in OA. And my sponsor said to me, well, if obnoxious jerks weren't allowed in OA, where would you have gone? Just like that. And he was right. Of all the obnoxious people I've met in OA, I'm at the top of the list. But it's also true, and this is just opinion. This is my opinion. This is not OA. It's not at all official. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. But recovery has a boatload of requirements. If all you want to do is be a member, that's fine. We love you. You're welcome here, and there's nothing wrong with that. But being a member of the fellowship and not working the steps is like joining a bowling league and never bowling. This is a 12-step fellowship, and this is what we do here. The only requirement to be a member is the desire to be a member. You declare that yourself. But my experience is, if you also want to recover, there are these 12 steps that we tend to do. most of us tend to be on the issue of the steps come out pro, in favor of. And this is an important tradition for life. I can be an aggressive driver, and it is important for me to remember that the only requirement to be on the highway is the desire to be on the highway. You know, you don't have to drive in the left lane the way I believe you're supposed to drive. All you have to do is want to be on the highway, and that's all I get to worry about.
That's 10 minutes, Gary.
Oh, thank you so much. Meg's going to have to talk about a lot of traditions. Tradition 4, each group should be autonomous. The 4th tradition really just does for groups what the 3rd group tradition does for individuals. It gives everybody a right to be wrong. In AA comes of age, Bill Wilson says this sort of liberty also prevents AA from becoming frozen set of dogmatic principles. And that's too easy to have happen. That's too easy to have happen where it just becomes a bunch of rules and behaviors, Each group is autonomous, except the matters affecting OA as a whole. You'd be surprised what affects OA as a whole. Not following the traditions really does. I was at a meeting last night where they rewrote the steps and they rewrote the book, like they were reading from the book, and they rewrote it to be gender neutral. And they took out all the he pronouns for God and just referred to it as God, which I think is a great idea. And I think if anybody wants to do that, they should make a motion to their intergroup, for their intergroup to make a motion to World Service, and for World Service to vote on it at the World Service Business Conference. I think it's a great idea. But for a group to take that on, autonomous means like you get to decide whether you're a speaker meeting or a big book meeting, that kind of thing. You don't get to rewrite OA material. It's copyrighted. That's stuff that that has been created by group conscious. The voice of God for our purposes. Our primary purpose is to carry the message to the compulsive eater who still suffers. It is just important to remember that the compulsive eater who still suffers is not always a newcomer. Or, it never endorsed finance or lending or a name to any facility or outside enterprise. This comes up a lot in the virtual region because we do offer a lot of virtual trainings. We offer trainings in other web-based platforms and how to use them and so forth. And it comes up a lot. One of my favorite lines is Bill Wilson said, the traditions were hammered out on the hard anvil of experience. Experience has taught us that, we don't get involved with other things. My first sponsor was on the exact opposite political end of the political spectrum of me than I am. And we didn't know that for 8 years. It was 8 years before we even realized we had political beliefs. It's so irrelevant to who we are. Every OA group ought to be self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I want to say 2 important things about the 7th tradition. One is, for most of us, the only real 12-step work we do is through the 7th tradition. If I'm at a meeting and somebody comes into the meeting, they've already heard of OA. They've already gotten the message. It's not like I'm not carrying the message to the newcomer who still suffers. They're there. They heard the message. They might need sponsorship. They might need help. But tradition 7, it's because of the $5 I put in the basket or $2 or $1 or 50 cents I put in the basket that there's a meeting list in New Zealand tonight, that a bulimic in Brussels can find a way out tonight. Recovery takes money. And OA is a financially losing proposition. Being self-supporting also means that, if your group doesn't have an intergroup representative, your group isn't self-supporting. Your group is depending upon others to do the work and carry the load for them. Service is a part of being self-supporting. I'm saying this like it's a fact, but it's really just, my opinions. But it does take money. I'm going to skip ahead a bit. I want to say a few things about anonymity, so I'm going to skip all the way ahead to anonymity. First of all, Dr. Bob said that because the 11th tradition makes clear where we are anonymous, it also implies where we're not. So we are anonymous at the level of press, radio, television, and in OA, other public media of communication, which is really important because in OA and AA, the 11th tradition is different. It's different in OA than it is in AA. And that's important. So when your friends start telling you, well, that's the way we do it in AA, you can say, this ain't AA. I have proof. The traditions are different. Anyhow, anonymity at the level of press, radio, and television is really a matter of ego. It's about not wanting to brag about what's been done to me in OA and keeping that to myself. It's a really practical matter. It has hurt OA repeatedly when people have hurt, when people have broken anonymity. When movie stars, and some of you remember a TV star who got on TV, talked about OA forever, and then relapsed, and OA became a joke.
That's 15 minutes.
Thank you so much. And I'm gonna close with one last thing. Anonymity is also humility in action. And it's really how we develop humility, is by practicing anonymity in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me babble on like that.
Thank you very much, Gary. Very good. We really appreciate it. Our second speaker is Meg.
Hi, I'm Meg. I'm a food and sugar addict and from Minneapolis, Minnesota in the United States. And I'm going to try to show you a before picture. So I was 260 pounds U.S. or I think I was like 82 whatever kilograms and about 20 stone. And now I weigh 140 pounds, 63 kilograms and 10 stone. So I'm in a much better place physically, but also emotionally and spiritually. So I want to open my talk with a quote by Jane Goodall, which I think the traditions, she covers this. Every individual matters. Every individual has a role to play. Every individual makes a difference. And the traditions, for me, you know, as Gary said, they're not rules to go around and rule the earth with. They're guidelines. And what they are for me is guidelines on how to act with other people. And those other people are my family, my coworkers, my friends, on the street, at work, or like I said, at work, and then OA people. And it's how do I do things? I grew up with goofy boundaries. You know, there were super strict rules or, well, mostly there were super strict rules. And then you had to do everything in a certain precision and all of this, you know, stuff. And when I came to OA, you know, I came in the mid-80s to 1990, and then I had a 14-year relapse. And I went from, you know, 155 pounds to 260 within that time frame. And I've experienced all the elements of it. But when I came back and got abstinent in 2004, I realized for me in the traditions, there are two absolutes that I know I can really rely on. One is all I need is a desire to stop eating compulsively, plain and simple. And that the other one is it's also my role, my responsibility to carry the message. And so those are the two things. And you know what? That keeps the focus on me. I'm not busy, you know, looking in someone else's business, even as much as I want to, because that makes me think about being kind of petty and insolent, you know. Well, Mom, so-and-so is doing this and they're not doing that or whatever. The guidelines, the traditions are telling me, well, what's your part in all of this? And are you keeping your focus on yourself and what you need to do? Many of you may have already heard this, though. The steps are suicide prevention. The traditions are homicide prevention. And I see the concepts as genocide prevention. It's, you know, it's keeping us so that we can get along with one another. So when I look at being a part of OA, and Gary, I really liked how you said that, you know, that we are self-supporting if we, you know, follow the requirements to be in recovery. I mean, in order for me to be in recovery, I have to use all the tools and follow all the steps and do my best work with the traditions as my guideline. But that I've learned two significant things that I came into. I'm not a doormat, but I'm not a corporate boss. And the traditions really help me define, you know, what's really okay. And as, you know, Gary brought up before, you know, what is our role? I mean, we have autonomy. Well, that doesn't mean we get to run shipshod. It doesn't mean that, oh, if I have a leadership role, you know, I happen to be a chair of something or whatever, that I get to call all the shots. Oh, there's times I slip up. I mean, you know, but again, that brings me back to another tradition that we are forever non-professional. So I also look at that. If I goof up, I can just say, oh, forever non-professional, and, you know, go from there. And it doesn't mean I get to use it as a scapegoat. It just means I can't then use the club towards myself. Being in recovery for me and looking at the traditions is really about how do I conduct myself as a human being. So when I was not in the food, face down, you know, with a flip-top head going at it all the time, I was angry, I was defensive, I was sure everybody was out to do me over. You know, it's like, oh yeah, so-and-so has it in for me, and so-and-so has it in for me, and whatever else. I look at me today, flash forward 18 years, and I'm amazed at how calm and tame and how my word usage has dramatically dropped. I'm not viciously talking about people behind their back or getting people to be my posse. I am doing my work and I'm walking in the day of, am I of service? Am I of service to this institution that I said I would be a part of? They are paying me to do an honest day's work, and I do the best that I can. I would say one of the main things I look at, too, in this program is how do we get other people to come to OA or let them know. I remind myself through this program that all I have to do is plant a seed. I don't have to go around and get converts and say, well, you have to join. You really need it. I know lots of people that could use it, but it's not for me to determine if they have the desire to stop eating compulsively or not. I have some very close family members that do not have the desire. So for me to try to get them into OA would be very disrespectful. And it also makes me the corporate boss, like I'd know, and I don't. And I also know if someone tried pushing me back into the rooms when I was in the middle of all of my relapse and so on, you know, they would have been a prisoner. Let's put it that way. So I look at what's attractive. How am I attractive? And am I putting my best Meg forward? Am I really doing my best to be a decent human being? I have found over the years that people have always told me lots of things. I don't know what it is. I mean, maybe it's my Midwestern face. Who knows? Now it's just age. Oh, she's old. She'll never tell anybody. I don't tell people. I mean, I do keep secrets that are appropriate. If someone is going to tell me something, I'll ask them, is this something that could harm someone else, blah, 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 then maybe you should tell someone else, whatever. I've learned those things. But I've learned that by being a kind and loving person, because I follow these traditions and live my program. I don't want to say work, live my program. I haven't incorporated this into my everyday life. Then I'm going to be attractive for recovery. I remember early on in my recovery on this journey, people would say to me, Meg, I don't know what you're doing, but keep doing it. And then I was too afraid to ask because they probably would have said, you know, you were kind of a big B back in the day. And I was. I mean, I always had to be funny and cutting and sarcastic and so on. I look at Tradition 12 as my guiding light because it's principles before personalities. And you know what? The best way that I've learned to practice the traditions is to do service beyond the group level and the intergroup level and the region level and the world level, because there are new challenges, new people, new personalities, and I've learned to use my mouth for something other than eating. I use my mouth to pray. I use my mouth to say kind and loving things. I use my mouth to zip the lip when I shouldn't be saying anything. But I've also learned to stand up for myself And I have found the words with that. And I found that in these rooms, whether it's a meeting, a convention, a workshop, or whatever, I hear other stories. That's attractive to me. And that's where I learned, too, about putting principles before personalities. Because going back to the quote that every individual matters, you know, it's great when we feel love. We feel the love for someone. But when someone that we're talking to is causing horns to appear, a beak, talons, fangs, a fin, whatever, it's really hard for me to think, oh, yeah, this person matters, too. All I want to do is be right, or I want to make sure I'm heard. I have every right to make sure I'm heard, but again, looking at the traditions, as far as looking at if it's in an OA room, whatever size room it is, you know, the autonomous, but thinking about, is this for good for the OA as a whole? And if I'm being a jerk, I'm really not considering OA as a whole. If I am thinking and praying for my words or even asking, I've learned how to say, I don't know. And it's not because I was raised, I knew everything. I was just supposed to have an answer. I was constantly clicked at, yeah, hurry up. So I would just throw out an answer so that I wouldn't be penalized for whatever it was. And so the traditions have helped me unlearn some non-effective habits as an adult and learn new ones. And so it's so nice to know that, you know, we have a group of people who are our employees. Thank goodness. So they are our employed and special workers because they take care of all of that administration. They take care of our money. They take care of all of our copyrights and legal stuff, and it's wonderful because we're in the business, you could say, of recovery and being there for everyone else and being self-supporting. And so this gives me time and energy to be a sponsor, to be a better person who prays, journals, you know, gives service. I mean, really, it's just, am I self-supporting? When I came into program right before, I was hideously in debt. And I felt justified with that. I mean, all of my bad behavior before I came into program was justified. And I justified it by overeating. I've done all the gamut, but my go-to was always volume eating. And that was mine. And then I would just find people to, you know, buy into my lies. And go from there. And so I've learned to become more compassionate. I remember one of my journeys included counseling. And I remember she asked me if I knew what compassion meant. Of course, I looked at her and I had different thoughts and visions for this person. Because I knew why she was asking me was, you know, did I really understand what it meant and the importance of it, and that the fact that I didn't know everything, and go from there. I just look at the whole journey of the traditions. I remember at first I thought they were pretty crunchy and kind of dorky, or it's like they're just trying to keep us in line. And now I just really have grown to love them because it gives me, you know, kind of like bumper pads on the sides. And if I get too close, you know, I'm not going to get electrified. I'm just going to get bumped. I guess the one thing, too, I love about being of service. Thank you. Being of service in these rooms is that we all play by the same rules and we all count. I just kind of take it for granted that people are doing the best that they can. And so with that, I pass. Thank you.
So much. That was wonderful. Great speakers. Now we have a question and answer time, and if you would write questions in the Q&A rather than in the chat, it would be helpful, and I will read questions to the speakers. I have a question already, and the first one is, says two related questions. What do the traditions say about outside literature? Some seem to imply we should only use OA conference-approved literature, yet another tradition says each meeting is autonomous and therefore should choose for itself. Related to that would be, wouldn't the quote from Jane Goodall that was used in this meeting be considered outside literature?
Well, I'll start. And yes, I guess I could say that is outside literature. I will say that. I guess my belief is because we have quotes in our books, that's why I did that. But I will keep that in mind for future, that I most likely won't do that. So thank you for that. And the other thing is, and it's going to sound, you know, counter to what I just did, is that autonomy, provided that it doesn't affect OA's unity. And so, you know, the guideline is to use conference-approved literature because it's OA message. And with that, I pass.
Thank you. Gary, did you want to say something on that? I do not as yet have another question.
There you go. Thank you. You know, autonomy is a funny thing. What affects the OA as a whole? If a newcomer comes to a meeting and people are recommending even other 12-step books, you know, I can't tell you how many meetings I go to where people tell me what they learned in Al-Anon or what they learned in AA. And those are outside enterprises. And that's, you know, ODAT is an outside piece of literature. It makes it seem as if the OA message isn't enough, isn't strong enough, it can't stand on its own. And it waters down the OA message. Autonomy, like I said before, really isn't, if it affects OA as a whole and other groups, using non-conference approved literature does that. It also makes the group unsafe. If today I'm able to use, I don't know, something, if I'm quoting from the ODAT, that means tomorrow somebody else can quote from their rabbi, and somebody else can come in with their book from their priest or their therapist or, God forbid, their life coach. Like, any of that stuff becomes possible, and it harms OA as a whole. As far as, though, like when I share, I frequently quote a line from some piece of literature or a movie I saw or something like that. There's a big difference between quoting a line from something and recommending it or suggesting its use. Yeah, the Jane Goodall quote, for example, I don't find that problematic. I would find it problematic if somebody said, I recommend we all read Jane Goodall. You know, that this is a way to work the program. That would be a real... but if it's just to illustrate a point, you know, make him an offer he can't refuse, if I'm using a line to illustrate a point, then I'm using a line to illustrate a point, and it's not the same thing as outside literature, frankly, at least in my opinion.
Thank you. Thank you all. I have no more questions, which I find hard to believe. Ah, here's something. My meeting is in a country where there is very little long-time recovery. Meetings are filled with new members who believe and claim that it is the place to let out our problems. Some have denied that meetings are especially made to welcome newcomers and that those who still suffer. I am an old member and I feel I have tried to defend the traditions. Please help. Go ahead, Meg.
All right. I guess what I would like to just suggest is that, that can be a lot of responsibility for a long-timer. And because I know what that feels like when you have to constantly redirect, and you can easily look like the bad guy. And that's not it. I would encourage the newcomers who also go to other meetings, online, and if there are other meetings, and just to say to learn, or else I would also consider bringing up a tradition every month. You know, if you're a step meeting, for example, say, could we on the second X of the month talk about the tradition and do the tradition of the month. So in January, do tradition one and go from that. I have done that before because people thought the traditions were dumb. And I thought, well, this is a great opportunity for all of us to learn the importance. And then everybody participates and someone leads that every month so that new people have to read about it and prepare. So it isn't the burden of one person. Thank you. I'll pass.
Yep.
I loved Meg's answer and her suggestion. The only thing I would add to that is when you're in a meeting and it's mostly newcomers, frequently we do have to be a little bit more lenient around this stuff. You know, I don't want to scare anybody away because they said the wrong thing or they, you know, mentioned a food item and this group conscious says we don't do that, like that kind of stuff. So just being, you know, it's just as fine after the meeting to pull somebody aside and say, here's the reason we don't do this, and explain to them the beauty of the tradition and how it helps us grow spiritually. It doesn't have to be a big public announcement.
Thank you. The next question is, why are we still using AA literature and hearing about alcoholism when OA is 60 years old? Why has OA not written our own manual?
We have. It's actually in two volumes. One's called Overeaters Anonymous. It's the story book. It's frequently referred to as the Brown Book, even though it's not brown anymore. But that does what the story section of the big book does. And then we've written our own 12 and 12, which is, for our purposes, a big book. It's lots of other fellowships that have their own big books, and that's all they have is a 12 and 12 of some sort. So we have. As far as why we still stick with AA material, even though OA is 60 years old and able to function on its own, is a great number of us love the AA material. You know, it's just it's a matter of love and, you know, what we were raised on. But all of it's good, you know. All of it's good. If you don't like using the big book and you don't like using the AA 12 and 12, stick with the OA 12 and 12 and stick with the OA story book, the abstinence books. We have a lot of literature, abstinence. There's a new book coming out called Diverse Voices, which you will really dig. There's one on the traditions. Like some of you know, the green book for group study of the steps. There's a version of that coming out for group study of the traditions. It's really worth looking into. We have great literature and no reason to not just stick with that. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is it okay to share, learn something in another fellowship without naming it, or share only what I learned in OA?
Well, I guess I'd like to say that you can share whatever you've learned, and I would say it's prudent to not mention where you learned it, just to say I learned in a meeting. I learned from someone. I learned from, and just keep it very generic, because the intent is about the message, not about the person. You know, you wouldn't say, well, I got this message from a person who's 5'8", and they had long black hair and really well-groomed nails and perfect lipstick. And then the message they told me was, don't be a corporate boss. You know, you need to be attractive in this program. The message is, I learned from someone that, you know, hey, I'm being too forceful and I'm going to make an apology and whatever. Not that it always has to be that, but we learn messages, you know. I just like to see them with higher power with skin on, and we don't have to name the messenger. We just get to talk about the message.
The only thing I would add to that is it's not so much saying about where I learned it. It's when I get to a meeting and somebody says, well, listen, we're talking about the ninth step, and somebody says, I've never done the ninth step in OA, but I've done it in some other fellowship. I have lots of friends in AA who are eating themselves to death. The fact that you did a ninth step in some other fellowship is no more relevant than the fact that you go to the gym once a week or that you go to church. I mean, it's in the same category. People come to OA because they don't know how to stop eating. So if your message is going to help us learn how to stop eating, or if you want to share about how you don't know how to stop eating, that's one thing. But if you want to share about your wisdom that you've gained someplace else, when I do that, I feel just afterwards, I feel dirty. When I do that, when I'm just showing off that I know crap, afterwards, I feel like I feel dirty.
Thank you. The next question is, what advice would you give when someone feels they are being discriminated against?
I'm just thinking about this because that is a very complex question. If you think it's one person, I guess ask yourself if you have the confidence to talk to them after the meeting. If it's a meeting concern, you know, I guess I would find support. You know, maybe, you know, I'm just going to say this. Let's say, for example, I walk into a meeting room and they don't want people from Minnesota. And they find out I'm from Minnesota. And someone's like, oh, yeah, you're Minnesotan, you know, I can tell by your accent. Yeah. And let's say I take offense to that. Well, I'm not going to directly say anything in the meeting. I may want to. Let's say I feel defensive about it or whatever. But I might, you know, might have the courage to end the words. You know, there's times I can have the courage, but I don't have the words. But after the meeting, just say, you know, I was really offended by that and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Go from there. If it's the whole room and they're like, we don't allow Minnesotans in here. Okay, where I am today, I would probably say, wow, why is that? Because my understanding is, you know, tradition three, I have the desire to stop eating and it doesn't make any difference where I'm from. If it is a collective, I mean, again, because I know it can be gender, race, you know, all of that. And I'm just going to call out I'm white. So I've not had a lot of, you know, culture and race and all of those other elements facing me. If it is a big breach in a meeting or something, I would go to your sponsor and then maybe it's together. You could find some other people and go to the intergroup or go to your trustee and say, you know, that there's a problem. So just, I guess the thing is find a way to get your word across, find the appropriate audience and get the help, the guidance that will help with that. Because in my opinion, that's not allowed. OA is for everyone. Everyone who has a desire to stop eating.
Thank you. Gary, did you want to say anything on that one?
Okay. That was perfect.
I have another question surrounding a close vote in a group conscience. I once heard the abstaining votes, or the people who don't vote yes or no, to the non-majority vote. Do either of you know anything about that? Thank you.
Do you want me to answer that quickly or should I stop?
Please answer it quickly, I would say.
It depends really on there are two ways of counting votes. One way of counting votes is the majority of the number of votes cast, and the other way is the number of voting members. When it's the number of voting members, an abstinence vote actually works out counting as a no. I would also tell you that the concepts call for substantial unanimity, which means that if it's an important issue and the vote is close, we're probably better off tabling it or postponing it for another time when we can come closer to true group conscious, right? Not just a majority vote.
Thank you so much. All right.